to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
The only thing we love more than books is outer space.
Outer space. I want to go there.
Reading in space.
In space. Does that mean we've jumped the shark now that we're having an in space episode?
Well, we're not in space yet.
Live from the International Space Station, it's Novel Ideas.
Oh my god, it'd be so crazy.
NASA puts out a press release that they're looking for unpopular podcasters to spend $100 million on training and sending to the space station.
Only apply if you have fewer than 20 listeners. Yeah. Perfect.
Exactly. Definitely don't apply if you're even remotely in the kind of shape you need to be an astronaut.
Well, I'm closer than you are.
Yeah, I think you'd actually be within whatever the range is. With me, they'd be like, you know, it's going to cost us like an extra $1 million to send you into space for every pound you don't lose.
Did you hear that, that women, like, women-led missions to places like Mars could actually be more cost-efficient for NASA because women need less fuel because they burn it more slowly.
Right.
So you could actually pack way less food if your crew was entirely women, like on a two-year mission, and the ship would weigh less and it would cost everyone less.
I mean, it makes sense. It's all about saving weight, so you really should send, like, a bunch of... You should basically send women and jockeys.
Yeah. I was like, man, the first time I've ever heard, like, a positive outcome of men burning calories faster than women.
Oh.
We're better for long space missions.
That's right. You can have a lower calorie diet.
Yeah, that's why Binti does so well.
Yeah, maybe
after the Medusa attack.
That must be it.
Yeah,
cracks
the
code. It's science.
You're welcome, Nnedi Okorafor. So, this episode we read the novella Binti by Nnedi Okorafor. It was nominated for both a Hugo and a Hugo.
A Hugo.
And a Hugo and a Nebula. A Hugo and a Nebula Award, and it actually won the Nebula category for Best Novella. So we figured, because we were about due to read some sort of science fiction, and this one was being recognized, and the fact that, you know, we always appreciate science fiction that's written by a non-white, non-male author, then that is a good thing.
Yeah, it's been a good year for that on the award slates, actually.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like the science fiction community is, I think, looking to exclude men as much as it is just that women are writing cool stuff at the same rate, and people don't really care who wrote it as long as it's good.
Yeah. And for anyone who is interested in reading fantasy and science fiction that has been nominated for awards, you might remember us gushing over The Fifth Season, but that is also up for awards, and we, of course, highly recommend that.
That's right, and I guess I should read the book that won before I say that I don't understand how The Fifth Season didn't win, but The Fifth Season's amazing. I don't know how it didn't win.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at my Goodreads the other day and marveling at how few five-star ratings I give out. I'm like super stingy. Even some of my favorite books of all time, I'm like, well, I can see the problems with them. I should only get 4 stars. But Fifth Season, hard 5 for me, so.
All right. So, you know, this outline I have appears to be a blank template.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Did I not send you the correct thing?
I don't know.
What? Ugh. Just a second.
Okay.
Let's figure this out.
We are experiencing technical difficulties. I'll insert some elevator music here instead of cutting this.
Huh, weird. Like, my... Something does say... Podcast template... Okay, wait. Let me try closing it and sending it, and then see if that has, like, some weird effect on it. Ugh.
Ugh. It's the worst. So this delay has been brought to you by Minerva Mag, as we are part of the Minerva Podcast Network.
You better cut this shit out. It pisses me off when you leave this stuff.
I will probably cut most of this out. I may leave the part about it pissing you off when I leave it in the...
Okay, just resend it. See if that works.
Hey, it worked.
Okay. I guess it was because I had it open in Word when I sent it, so...
Okay.
It must have freaked out.
Yeah, so, depending on what I do decide to cut out... if it flows naturally, I tend to leave it in. That's my system. Even if it's clearly us just being like, derp... But if there's too much dead air, that's when I start cutting. So anyway, we, in all seriousness, are part of the Minerva Podcast Network.
It's true. We are. So if you're listening to us on our website, novelideaspodcast.com, you can also find us at minervamag.com.
And there's lots of stuff we like over there, as we have a founding member and an... semi-regular contributor doing this podcast.
That's me, not that.
I'm a semi-regular contributor.
Yeah. I show up on three... I've shown up on every podcast on the Minerva Podcast Network at least once, so...
I
had to get rid of.
Gabs is the queen of podcasts.
I wish.
You probably spend... your, like, ratio of time... on the air versus people who actually listen to you is probably one of the highest ones. Like anywhere on the internet.
Thanks, Ben.
That's not fair. I don't know what the Minerva numbers are. Maybe you're getting 50,000 downloads on Nostalgia Myalgia.
No, that's not happening.
Not happening yet?
No.
You'll get there.
If you want to invest $500,000 into the website, then we can get started on that.
All right. Yeah, optimize our shit.
Yeah.
Or you could do the novel ideas path, where at our current rate, I believe we're gaining roughly 10 new followers a year, so.
Woohoo!
Yes! So, let's see, what are we doing? Right, Binti, science fiction. The plot synopsis, girl overcomes racism with the power of friendship.
Yes, you'll find, as in many of our podcasts, people overcome difficulty with the power of friendship, and this book is no exception.
It's true. It's one of the most common tropes out there, especially for things written for younger people.
Yeah. I just read A Wrinkle in Time, and it reminded me all over again, defeating things with the power of love. Just to give a brief overview, since even though this is nominated for awards, I don't know how many people have heard of it. So it's about Binti. She's a teenage girl. She's a member of the Himba tribe, which is an African tribe. She gets accepted to Umza University, which is in space, and she's the first person in her tribe to ever get accepted, but her family doesn't want her to go because, like, their cultural norms dictate, like, you stay... in your place, basically, and you don't, like, wander off the planet or wander away. But she really wants to go, so she decides to run away, basically, so she can go to this university. And on her way, their spaceship is attacked by the Medusa, which is this kind of I don't know, like, jellyfish robot race. I'm not 100% sure. And they murder everyone on the ship except for Binti by virtue of her having some sort of magical object that prevents murder. And so by virtue of them spending so much time on the ship together, because they can't murder her and she doesn't murder them, they basically talk it out and start coming to an understanding and realizing that a lot of their conceptions of each other are coming from places of misunderstandings, and they are able to, at the end, kind of broker a peace deal between the people at the university and the Meduse. There you go.
There you go.
It's about 90 pages, so it'll take you, like, I don't know. How long does it take you to read? Like, an hour?
Yeah, I think about an hour.
Hour and a half, maybe?
I think I got about a few pages into it. I got to the first, like, break in it, and the corner of my Kindle said, like, 50 minutes to go. So, that's probably about it.
Yeah, I think I read for about half hour and checked out my Kindle percentage, and I was, like, already nearing halfway, which is very unusual, because I've been reading a lot of, like, huge nonfiction books lately where I read for half an hour, and it's like, you are now 1% farther than you are. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't read a lot of things that are novella length,
and yeah, I barely ever. I actually don't know the last time I read a novella.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the last time I did was probably one of those anthologies that was like a novella that the author then wrote a half dozen or so short stories to tag on to the end to make it long enough to sell.
Yeah.
That was a while ago. I think there was a Joe Haldeman collection, actually. But that doesn't matter. So, actually, that novella, boy, I can't remember the name of it, but I'm fairly certain that it was about not automatically murdering people because they were outsiders. Maybe that's a thing with science fiction novellas. I don't know. I'll have to look that up, see if I can figure it out.
Yeah.
So anyway, the setting of this story is space.
It's space, the final frontier.
And maybe just a smidge of Earth or someplace kind of like Earth.
Earth-like planet.
We never decided.
We're not clear on that.
Yeah, we didn't decide for certain.
Yeah. And it's told from Binti's point of view, so it's a very, how old is she? She's like 16?
I think so. Right? I think so.
So it's from a more, she's like a very straightforward and simplistic way of telling the story from her experience, so it's reflected in the writing. As we've discussed, usually if the novel is first person, then the person doing the narrating is the protagonist, and that is the case for this book.
Indeed.
And on top of that, she's basically, I would say, one of two characters that you actually care about. Everyone else is just kind of like, you know, here's Binti and here's Okwu, and then everyone else is just kind of like there, but not really like fully fleshed out, so.
Yeah, because they either have like two lines of dialogue or have two lines of dialogue and then die.
Yeah.
depending on who they are.
So we're not going to have our, you know, occasionally ridiculously long list of characters. So I don't know. Let's talk a bit about Binti. As we mentioned, she is part of the Himba people and the first person to be accepted into this university. And you quickly find out that her specialty is math. She's apparently a mathematical genius, which is kind of reflected in the fact that she's like the first person of her tribe ever to like get accepted into this university. And then you also get a taste of, like, her bravery and, I guess, like, headstrong stubbornness.
She has, she has plucky YA protagonist qualities to her.
Yes.
But the one, actually, this just occurred to me, one of those qualities that she's missing is she's not a snarky character.
No, definitely what,
like, not whatsoever.
I don't know if she, like, makes a joke ever.
No, actually, I think she does. The only, man, I don't know if there's even, like, a single snarky exchange, unless you count alien jellyfish creatures saying that they're going to kill you is the only thing they ever say to you. Like, maybe if it was playful some of the time, and
if they were doing, like, a Dread Pirate Roberts, like, good right. work, I'll probably kill you in the morning sort of thing.
Like, the first 25 times were serious, and then after that it started to become just a little bit more of a running gag. Binti just didn't have the cultural knowledge yet to to be able to interpret that way, so it was like, yeah, okay, but as soon as, you know, I can, I'm gonna murder you. And inside he's giggling, but she's terrified.
She's like, oh god. He's like, we're best friends.
We're best friends. Best friends murder each other on my planet.
That does not happen in this book.
Yeah, by the way, none of that is actually from the book. That's all just me being dumb.
So that is true. She does not have, like, the snarker humor gene. She shows off her pluckiness immediately, because the novella actually opens with her running away from home so that she can go to this university. So she like, knows that her family's going to be super pissed about it.
Yeah, she fully expects to be disowned, actually.
Yeah.
So that's how important it is to her to go.
That's how much she loves math, guys.
That's right.
Just think about if you love anything in your life enough to be disowned by your family.
Math is not on the list.
Math is certainly not on my list.
And actually, I'm going to throw in something here. So I think one of the things that's interesting about her character, she's a plucky YA protagonist, but also would be the straight man if she was unfortunate enough to have a snarky sidekick. But despite being this mathematical genius, she's not, like, the coldly analytical character either, because one of the other things that is that the book actually does say is that multiple times it's mentioned she has some, like, extraordinary extra insight into other people, and I guess peoples, since a lot of the people in this book are not human people. And, I mean, part of the story arc is her proving that by learning to communicate with these aliens, that the only prior communication has really been in the form of warfare.
Yeah, she is actually very understanding and empathetic of the people around her, and very emotionally, like, you know, even though she expects her family to disown her, very emotionally connected to her people and her traditions, and very serious about her interests. So, yeah, there is definitely none of that, like, I do math, so I don't know how to talk to people, like, sort of thing that people do sometimes.
Which is how, I mean, certainly how, like, movie and television fiction at least does it. In books, it's not.
Yes.
In books, it's a little more common for the math genius to also be a normal person, because I'm guessing a lot of people who write books about mathematical geniuses, a lot of, if they go to the trouble to show that the person's a genius, they write about, like, actual math instead of someone being like, there is a 41.2169% chance we're not going to survive this. Which any
right.
real math person would be like, you pulled those decimal points out of your ass. Get out of
like,
here.
What are you talking about?
It's like a Hollywood writer's concept of what math is.
Like, I can do math, but I'm not a robot. Like, stop it. Totally. That's one of the really cool things about science fiction is a lot of the really, like, scientific or mathematical science fiction is written by, like, huge geeks who are into that science and into that math themselves, which is why they're able to write people who know about it without being, like, resorting to stupid nerd stereotypes.
Yeah, I read when they are nerdy, they're always nerdy in a way that's a lot more hilarious than being socially unaware. I read a book where one of the two characters was a math genius, and he had a tendency to get distracted sometimes because he was, like, graphing the functions of the ripples that fish made in the water in his head. He was like, it's really interesting. And the people were like, hey, dude, eyes up here. But he, like, interacted normally when he wasn't distracted by pretty functions.
Yep. It's like getting distracted by shiny things, except just how slightly different.
Well, yeah, so, like, you walk past a booth in a convention that is whatever geekdom the friend you're with is into, and they suddenly don't hear a word you're saying, and might even have already walked 25 feet away from you. Holy shit, is that a collector's edition of X? You're like, wait, where'd you go?
That's like if there's even a hint of music on anywhere and trying to talk to Scott.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, here's a 5-minute story about my day. And he's like, huh, what? I thought I faintly heard chord changes. You're like, oh, Jesus.
I thought I heard a sharp 5 in that. That's a weird way to do that one. I don't know.
This has definitely happened to me before. So back to Binti.
Yes.
So yeah, she has this kind of uncanny ability to communicate, and that's basically what leads to the peaceful resolution at the ending, is she's able to kind of bridge the gap between these two peoples who've been trying to murder each other for a while, so... but never in a way where it's like, oh, she's the only one who could have done such a thing. One of the things that's kind of cool about it is because she comes from, like, this different culture, you kind of get this underlying, like, hey, if you have people from outside cultures who have different experiences and opinions than you, you might learn things and how to understand other people.
Right.
Because she definitely has to navigate that just among, like, humans, and that might help her with her understanding of the Medusa. So, yeah.
Yeah, she has this really... another thing I guess I'm realizing is we kind of thought that this book is, in some ways, and this is not intended as an insult, this was a conscious choice by the author, but in some ways lacks a little bit of sophistication. But some of the even dumb riffs we've done in the last couple minutes, I think, kind of highlight that there's a lot of implied depth and well-roundedness to this character. That she does kind of, the more I talk about her, the more she seems like a person.
Yeah, and I think, because the narration is just so simple and straightforward, it's very easy to just kind of be like, okay, like, the story itself is simple and straightforward. And the conversations don't have all of these, like, crazy things going on. People are just kind of saying what they feel at each other, which is what Ben is talking about, that lack of, like, the sophistication, like, the complexity, but then at the same time, like, hey, if you can actually talk about it, there's got to be something going on.
Yeah, right? And she does, I mean, one thing that the narration does make very obvious is that she has an awareness of kind of how I guess cultural prejudices come into play, because even though she's from a relatively small group, a pretty insular group that doesn't interact a lot with the outside, like when she's traveling to the spaceport, some of the kind of I guess, vaguely dick behaviors of people around her who aren't used to seeing her people. Like, she's kind of going, well, this is kind of what you expect when you see this. And then when she, I don't know, like, maybe just, what was the other group of people that we were, what was the term, Koro?
I don't remember.
I keep my biggest struggle with this book is I keep either adding, subtracting, or replacing consonants from things when I try to do it from memory. But it's a term she uses to describe the other people in her area, and it seemed like maybe it was another, maybe like ethnic group or cultural group from her region. But then as the story went on, by the end, I was kind of wondering if it was just a generic term for outsider that her people use.
And maybe, we weren't sure if they were supposed to be, like, another specific culture, like, from, oh, wow, sorry. Words just fell out of my brain as I was trying to talk. Yeah, like, a very specific group of people, or just, like, a more general term for, like, non-Himba people, or, like,
yeah. Like, once she's friendly, she's been friendly with the Medusa for a longer time. Like, if we read the sequel that happened a year after this, the zany slice of life college comedy that she and Okwu are going to take part in another year. like, would Medusa just be... Would she just use that other term to describe them? Just, oh, like, people who aren't Himba as opposed to Medusa?
I couldn't say.
I don't know. I don't know either. I guess that's why I'm asking the question.
People other than us.
Yeah.
Might have some insight.
Yeah, if anybody knows, I guess, let us...
Koosh.
Like, give us a clue. Tell us what to go read.
It's the Koosh. Khoush. Is the term she uses.
See, I told you, I was displacing consonants. So, I guess talk about Okwu a little bit.
Yeah. Not as much to talk about with him or it or gender term pronoun, I don't know. So Okwu is one of the Medusa, which is this alien race that are jellyfish-like, and he ends up being, like, one of the main people, is not the correct word, one of the main Medusa who interacts with Binti while they're on the spaceship, and when she kind of gets to know him a little better, learns that he's not so much just, like, a jerk face. He is hot-blooded and quick to anger, but it's more coming from a place of... he seems to be, like, one of the younger Medusa, and he's just, like, really pissed about the stuff that's happened to his people, so he gets, like, really worked up about humans, but not, like, in a... He's not, like, just a killer automaton or anything.
Yeah, he's an angry young jellyfish man.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of, like, a good equivalent, but he pretty much came up in a culture where humans were considered evil because we're always making war on the Medusa, which is probably because the two races didn't really have a good way to communicate with each other. Since as soon as they can communicate with each other, there don't seem to be that many issues from that point forward.
Yeah, was Binti the first human who was able to successfully actually speak to the Medusa?
I think maybe so, because they had said they were familiar with, like, the history or with the idea of fighting with humans. And, of course, the chief had his stinger stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't know, they seemed equally surprised. I'd say both sides seemed equally surprised when they were able to understand each other.
Yeah, so this is maybe possibly the first time ever that there's been communication, which you could see why that would maybe lead to bad things.
Right, yeah, and we're not really sure how that was able to work initially, but it has something to do with Binti's extra powerful ability to understand how other people work, I guess.
Yeah, and that little magic box thing she was holding.
Yeah, because one of the space professors at Space Harvard said that it should have been impossible.
Space professors at Space Harvard.
Possible episode title?
Oku, and yeah, the other kind of thing you get the impression of him, or you kind of learn, is, you know, he grew up learning that humans are a murderous, evil bunch. They call her evil a lot at the beginning, but kind of in the way of someone who has grown up hating humans and thinking they're evil, but has never actually really met or hung out with humans.
Yeah, that's a thought Binti has at one point, where she goes, oh, the way this guy keeps calling everything evil is like some of the young men from back home who will talk about how bad something is that they've never actually experienced.
Yeah, so it's that thing where, you totally think a person or a thing or whatever is terrible, and then when you actually experience it or interact with that person or whatever, you're like, oh, maybe not what I thought. Really, we should just force politicians to read this book. And
yes, I'm sure reading Binti will make Donald Trump immediately a better person.
I don't know. We're like, listen, you're the Medusa. And just have someone explain it to him, give him a little lesson. So, a lot we've been talking about, clearly one of, the big issues of the book is racism and prejudice. So, in this case, there is actually, a little bit between people in the case of the non-Himba people around Binti, looking at her, thinking she's weird. I think at one point they're like, why are you wearing so many bracelets? What's that about?
So snakes won't bite us on the ankles. And they're like, well, there are no snakes in the ship. She's like, you dick. And she took most of them off.
Yeah, she kept two on because she liked the jangling. But yeah. I was like, but that is a thing, when stupid managers are like, you can't wear your hijab to work.
Right.
So yeah, there's that misunderstandings between people, but then also the more obvious one, which is just, humans and the Medusa and hating each other, and how they have to kind of learn to understand and communicate and see where people are coming from.
Yeah, there's almost there's almost this reversion to childhood on some of these prejudicial things where why do you have weird things on your ankles? Stop being weird. Or the person in line behind her grabbing her hair for no good reason. Or which we'll get to in just a second. Or the Medusa going, all humans are killers, you're evil. And her being like, I don't think I'm evil. And they're like, we'll murder you. She's like, oh God, maybe they're also all evil murderers.
But she said something like, I don't think I'm evil. And they're like, that makes you the most evil of them all.
Right. But it's
she's like, what?
It is this really black and white, I guess that's kind of appropriate in some ways, but kindergarten level understanding of other people. And some of these, the misunderstandings in the book really are the types of things you see in real life, the manager who doesn't understand the hijab and just having this almost kindergarten reaction of, that's weird and different. You should not be weird and different. It's like, hey, buddy, this is not weird or different where I come from.
Yeah, you're the weird and different one in my homeland, man. Yeah. Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of that going on. I would say that's probably one of the more main issues of the book. Or the main issue of the book.
The unavoidable issue of the book.
Yes. That's the issue that if you don't recognize that's going on, then you probably do not have any reading comprehension.
So
this is not us being master analyzers of text.
No, certainly not. And in fact, if you've come here for master analyzers of text, you might be in the wrong place anyway. I mean, for the record, I don't actually think we're bad, but I don't know if we're coming up with, like, dissertation-level analysis all the time. racism, prejudice, maybe a little bit on... actually, I'd say more than a little bit on... Also, colonialism as well, because just that's... people kind of making assumptions about whose culture is superior. She had a thought pretty late in the book. Binti had a thought pretty late in the book where she kind of had this moment of, I guess, revelation where she goes, oh, tribal's the term that people use to describe other people that are assumed to be less sophisticated. Because,
yeah.
I mean, she comes from an area that would typically be described as tribal, whether you were, I guess, meaning that good, bad, or neutral, that's a term that would be used. But, like, her family makes these incredibly complicated technological devices that only a very small percentage of people are smart enough and good enough to make.
Mm-hmm.
And she's apparently doing, like, the college-level mathematics as a girl living out in the desert somewhere. And maybe we shouldn't make assumptions about what someone's capable of just because they have clay in their hair.
Yeah. Once again, like, oh, that Ochi is like, you look weird, you must be stubborn.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Right. Or the Medusa are all angry because the chief's stinger was stolen from him, which is really putting it too kindly, because actually what would have had to happen is he would be at least lightly dismembered to lose that stinger.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering how that went about. Like, did they just, like, chop it off the end of him and, like, run away with it? And then...
Yeah, did they, like, capture him and take it because they didn't understand that he was, like, a thinking person?
That one's, like, pretty bizarre. I mean, I guess we do put, like, animals... in, like, natural history, or, like, in zoos, or, like, natural history museums, like, stuff like that, so, like, that concept makes sense, but it is, like, pretty, if the Medusa, like, have their own spaceships, it seems pretty wild that someone would do that, but they have, in fact, yeah, taken the chief's stinger and just put it in their museum, which is, like, totally a... look at this interesting culture and how we took a thing from them, and now we can, like, study them and... like, viewing them as less than, what's the word I'm looking for? Sentient?
Yeah.
Autonomous?
Or even if it just got shot off in a fight and someone grabbed it and took it and didn't realize that was a thing they would be, by honor, obligated to spend the rest of their life hunting down.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm sure there are parallels. I would say, given what... relatively little I know about Nnedi Okorafor, she probably did have parallels to specific human cases in mind. I'm sure there are artifacts you could take from a lot of different peoples throughout history that they would be gravely offended that you would soil with your outsider fingers because you weren't using the proper reverence or, I mean, ritual or even just plain old frame of mind and understanding
to, to handle it. Like taking something that's very sacred and just being like, oh, look at this cool thing. And they're like,
wow, look at this goofy, like, I don't know, lion, look at this goofy lion totem. And they're like, that's actually like an incredibly sacred object and we are obligated to kill you if you don't return it.
It's like if you like walked into like a church and like took down the crucifix and like started playing baseball with it or something.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good Western example. Like there are a lot of holy artifacts from the history of the Christian church that depending actually for the majority of the existence of the Christian church that if you went in and stole or desecrated by their definition of desecration said object, then they would feel kind of honor bound to like tie you to a stake and set you on fire.
And in that case, you're not even, like, you're, like, not even tearing off a person's body part, so...
Well, like, you're a non-Christian invader, and you break into a church and find a cask of wine, how are you supposed to know that it's important to them?
Yeah, yeah.
You're just looking for a good time, man. It's not nice to steal stuff, but you didn't know you were, like, drinking their god. That's... most people get mad when you do that.
This is kind of tied into the racism, the colonialism, but I just made a note of the cycle of violence where humans and Medusa are totally locked into this, like, well, you murdered X number of us, so now we're going to go murder a bunch of you. And then people are like, oh, you murdered us, now we're going to go murder you. And they just, like, instead of, like, trying to figure it out, they just basically are bent on mutual destruction. And they have to find a way to break out of that so that they don't just kill each other off.
That's another pretty, I mean, another pretty common issue or plot point in fiction and probably nonfiction actually as well. That was something that just came up in a book that I was reading like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
One of those exchanges of, ah, but they all like to wage warfare, and then the first person who actually bothers to try to talk to them, oh, actually, that's what they think about us. Maybe we should, like, stop killing each other, finally.
Jeez. Oh, man. Yeah. So. All right.
So, moving right along. I think... so, there was a scene that was kind of a pseudo-courtroom scene where Binti was kind of pleading, I guess, the Medusa's case, so to speak, in front of the board of whatever you would call it at Space Harvard. and I was kind of, I thought it was kind of interesting because in a lot of books that would have been like the key dramatic scene where she gets to give this brilliant oratory and make all these points about really just driving home what the themes of the book are, maybe. So maybe it's just good writing that she ended up not doing that, but that's also what made it interesting that that's how it was presented, because it was basically... so we went to see the board, we were all like, hey, what's up? And then I told them what I thought, and then they went to confer on it. And it was weird, because they did it right in front of us. And then after like an hour of talking to each other, they said, oh, you're totally right, and we're going to make everything okay.
Yep.
It was very not suspenseful.
Yeah, it's like everyone was talking, and I thought it was weird they didn't leave the room, and then the person in charge was like, well, you're right about everything. That was terrible. We're going to give that back. We're going to fire those people who took it from you. We're going to... I was like, oh, okay. Just like... laundry list of like, yep, we're not even going to fight you on this. Not even a little bit.
But it plays so well into our primary theme. Because, again, like, we're pretty sure from context that Binti's the first person who ever was actually able to talk to the Medusa without one side or the other starting to murder each other. And as soon as she's able to make it clear that, hey, this is why they're upset, this is why they're here, then the people at the university go, oh, our bad, we had no idea, that was actually kind of terrible, let's make that right. And I'll point out, they don't even really, I mean, maybe they did in part of their conversation with each other that we weren't privy to, even though it happened in front of the narrator. They didn't really even seem to be all that hung up on the fact that the Meduse murdered like 100 of their potential students on the way there.
That was actually something that like just occurred to me, like that we didn't talk about when we were outlining where, I mean, there's definitely, you know, at some point you have to like forgive the other side for like whatever murder, because if you just keep murdering each other, it's not going to work. But the whole, like, Binti's, all of her, like, friends and classmates just got murdered off. Everyone's like, well, you know, that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at some point you do have to forgive each other, but there are long-running conflicts in the world today where, I guess the most typical example would be some of these Middle Eastern conflicts where people will reference atrocities that are hundreds of years old.
So, I was reading some of the reviews on Goodreads because I like doing that, and a couple of people were pretty pissed about that. They were like, okay, like, I get it, they forgave them, they did screw up, but they're just gonna gloss over, like, the fact that the Meduse were gonna, like, try to murder the entire university and like, just murdered all of these innocent people. As we've mentioned, it's a novella, and I think maybe if you're constrained by the length of that, then you can't really like go into all the negotiation that went into. But it does maybe seem odd that they're like, well, yeah, we're cool with that, and now you can come to our university.
It seems like one of those things that you, like, in a longer work, it seems like the kind of arrangement you might eventually work out, but would take months of diplomacy and politicking, and no one would be totally comfortable with it in the end.
Yeah, that's a good point, though. So, don't know. You think maybe the dead children's parents might be a little upset about it.
True. At the same time, humans are only 5% of the population at this university, so maybe all the aliens aren't willing to go to war because one insignificant species had a few dozen people murdered on the way to their school.
Yeah, they're, well, you know. Yeah.
It does kind of make you wonder, like, not to make things real uncomfortable here, but if, like, 9/11 had happened on a Native American reservation, how pissed off would all the terrified white people in the United States have been, as opposed to it happening to the World Trade Center?
I don't know if I want to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go all the way there either, because it's, like I said, makes things uncomfortable, but that, like, just that tiny percentage of the population having a bad thing happen to him. Maybe that's how the university sees it.
Damn. That just makes me sad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think we'd be pretty horrified by something on that scale happening anywhere to anyone. And the fact that it happened on U.S. soil, regardless of which American people it was. I hope. Maybe I'm naive, but, you know, the fact that the question is uncomfortable maybe tells us something about our culture.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like we were saying, pretty much the main theme is, like, talk your shit out, understand each other, learn to empathize, and understand where other people are coming from, and once you do that, you can reach a good place.
Right. Murder aside, you can get to a good place.
And that seems to be a common topic. Actually, at my graduation, we had like a student speaker and an alumni speaker, and both of them talked a bunch about, like, go out into the world and meet new people and, like, learn where they're coming from and their stories, and then I was like, man, I guess, like, that's the word of the hour is, like, go out and talk to people and understand them and don't be a hater.
I guess so.
That's the real message of Binti is don't be a hater.
Don't be a hater. In some ways, it really could be. what about the sacrifice part of it?
Yeah, so Binti herself kind of has to go through this because in order to learn at the university like she wants and learn the things that she wants, she has to leave home, which is really hard for her, and especially, like, because the cultural norm is not to leave home, but so she has to, like, give up this her family and all this to go do what she wants. And then again, towards the end of the book, when the Medusa has to find some way for them to be able to communicate without her little, like, magic box thing, because the little magic box thing would kill them, and they don't think it's a great symbol to, like, have the person representing them also holding something that can kill them. So they give Binti these, like, the same, like, little tentacle-y things that they have. They turn her hair into, like, their tentacles. And before, her hair was, like, woven into a very specific array of braids. And she's not able to do that anymore. So, like, in order to be able to communicate with the Medusa and broker this peace treaty, she had to give up this, like, her hair, which was very, very important to her.
Yeah, she does really hold her ties to home and her home culture very closely, despite running away to go do math. She's, like, one of the really big elements of this story, which we somehow haven't managed to bring up yet, is that her people, the Himba, use this mixture of, I think it's like natural oils and red clay, and there are probably other things in there, but those are the two big ones, called Ochiz, which is not spelled like that, but they rub it on their skin and in their hair, and that's basically, that's the marker of, hey, you belong to this group. And that's the one thing that she really goes out of her way to maintain.
Uh-huh.
And she has to give up the part of that with her hair, at least, to be able to be an ambassador for this other group of people that she's learned about. And some kind of, I'd say, objectively awesome hair, if you want to go do a quick Google image search for the Himba people or for Ochiz, Otjize. It's pretty striking.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And so the book is, I mean, you know, Binti clearly has, like, these two very specific incidences, but the book's kind of making this point about, like, you know, if you want to go out and grow and learn or do something difficult, like connect with people that you don't want to or whatever, you can't just stay the same. You might have to give up something to gain something. And then you can't just always maintain your status quo.
Right, and, you know, ultimately giving that up is probably better. I mean, you're even if it means you have to overlook the Medusa raid on this ship heading to the school, it also prevents who knows how much more warfare and killing, right?
Yeah.
And that might be a lesson that is geared more towards even more towards a, I guess, more dominant culture. The folks who worry that because people who don't look like them are moving into their country, it's going to somehow, like, cause a problem.
Yeah.
Whereas, hey, maybe you adopt And especially given the way that things like language works, maybe you adopt a couple more words into English that aren't currently English and we're actually better off than worrying that not everybody around you sounds exactly like you do.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's a couple of these points of interest here. So we talked about the hair a couple times, especially.
Just speaking of the OGs and the fact that she wears it in her hair, Ben mentioned that, like, people touch her hair a couple times without asking. They just grab it. And I just found this is, like, an actual phenomenon that I have heard of, where Black women in particular will just have random strangers in public places touch their hair without permission. Like, they'll be in line, and the person behind them will just, like, grab their hair, and they're like, what are you doing? And so I thought that was, like, an interesting thing to include here that happens to Binti, as just, like, a tie into, like, larger cultural awareness of, like, seeing people who have a different whatever than you, and apparently losing your mind completely and touching a stranger without their permission. It just, like, gets me so worked up to think about. I'm like, why in the world would you ever do that to somebody? But it happens, so I just wanted to make sure that everyone listening knows that you should not touch a stranger's hair without their permission, because that's really freaky.
It's that kindergarten level understanding I was talking about earlier, right? That, oh, hey, that looks interesting. I better touch it. It's like, you're an adult. Like, you're allowed to think that, but you're supposed to, like, get to a point where you have the impulse control to go, I want to touch that. Oh, but you know what? I better shouldn't. I probably shouldn't. Maybe I should, like, that's the kind of request you make of someone you're on fairly friendly terms with.
Yeah, I would say even, like, I guess asking would be one step up from just grabbing, but still pretty weird to approach a stranger like, can I touch your hair? I don't know, man.
Right, that's more a conversation you have with someone you've been hanging out with for a while, if it's just killing you so much you just have to know.
Like,
I've been like, hey, we've known each other for a year. I've been totally fascinated with your hair the whole time. I'm just dying to know what the texture is. And they're like, fuck off, weirdo. Then you go, yeah, okay, fair point. But at least they won't be, like, weirded out or violated because they already know you well.
Yeah.
This is like, oh, there goes Ben and his lack of impulse control.
Oh, man. Yeah, please don't do that. Please don't touch people's hair without asking. It's so weird. So weird. And the other thing that we wanted to bring up was just, there's some, like, really cool background technology stuff going on in this book. We briefly touched on this, but astrolabes, which are, like, I guess Binti's family produces, and it's, like, this little thing you carry around that can, like, I don't know, it's kind of like an ultimate ID where people can, like, at the beginning it seems like the guy who's reading hers can, like, just, like, see into her and, like, read her memories and, like, who she is as a person type of thing.
Yeah, and I guess you can, I think she mentioned you can use them to, like, see someone's potential. It actually makes me wonder if there's a version of a story in this universe that's kind of dystopian and based on how everyone's place in society is determined by their astrolabes.
Yeah, totally.
But, yeah, it does seem to be some combination of, like, passport and personal assistant and, like, summary of your mind and personality and, kind of curious about exactly how those work and to what degree they determine things.
Yeah. The other feature we thought was really cool is the spaceship that Binti is on is actually, like, this organic like almost like this creature. It has these like special lungs that can breathe in space and take in like carbon dioxide people breathe out and turn it into energy. And it's like super interesting. Just kind of like briefly mentioned, but
yeah. And I was kind of, one thing I was wondering, I've come across a couple examples of organic or semi-organic ships and other science fiction stories before. I guess at least in one instance, ones that were kind of grown like that, though the focus of those books was not really all that strongly on how that was done either. But I was kind of wondering if that was maybe an idea that is more likely to pop up in a, I guess, non-Western setting, because it seems like the more traditional sci-fi fare is definitely like, who can build the biggest, most badass, most technologically awesome ship? Or occasionally in some settings, like the really high-tech ship that is not as small or heavily armed or something can outperform all the big, clumsy ships because it's so high-tech, which is, you know, we love our iPhones and our smart appliances that connect to the internet, even though all they need to do is, like, be turned on for 20 seconds to heat something up in the microwave. And, like, if the idea of having this, like, because an organic kind of, like, grown ship could almost be this, you know, more natural, naturistic sort of thing, maybe.
Yeah, it's like a different approach. And yeah, maybe coming from this awareness that Nnedi Okorafor has of cultural differences, that she's not locked into that, like, technology as being just strictly tech that we invent sort of thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, and maybe this, I guess the bioengineering sort of idea is a thing that is out there, but I don't know, this seemed to be just a little bit different in flavor to me, because it was a little less invasive. It wasn't like engineering a person to be able to do a certain thing, or implanting technology into a person to make them do a certain thing, or, like, it was just like the ship seemed to be grown for the purpose of being a ship.
Yeah. That was really interesting.
Yeah, clearly I thought maybe too much about it.
The other thing I just wanted to point out, I think the cover of this book is really cool.
Yeah. Actually, there's one thing I wanted to point out that we didn't touch on yet, and that was at the beginning of Binti's journey to Space College, it was kind of setting up one of those, oh, there'll be a little bit of romance between these two characters from different cultural traditions, because the second time her hair was touched by a stranger, it was kind of turned into a semi-meet-cute moment. And then, like, a page later, they're making this eye contact across the cafeteria, and then all of a sudden a jellyfish stinger bursts through his chest and he dies.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Like, whoa! All right. It's not that kind of story, I guess.
Suck it, romance.
That's right.
And friendship, because all her friends, like, immediately die afterwards.
That's true. Four people get names and are mentioned that they're kind of friendly people, and then they're dead within 2 pages.
Yeah. Does not take long to just get straight to the murder part. Which is actually tied in to strengths and weaknesses of the writing, because Ben and I were talking about whether or not, like, it should be longer or shorter, and we both agreed, like, it couldn't really be any shorter. But I was kind of wondering, like, what would happen to it if it was longer, and we were talking about the potential of, you know, actually giving all of her friends, like, personalities and spending, like, multiple chapters with them on the ship, like, bonding and interacting and then killing them all off.
Right.
And just, like, trying to destroy the readers.
Yeah, so I mean, things were very simply and straightforwardly told. And again, like, intentionally. So one of the things in the acknowledgments, she, Nnedi Okorafor, mentioned that her 11-year-old daughter helped her with the story quite a bit. And so I'm thinking that the intended audience for this are probably right around 11 years old.
Yeah, it's...
intended audience, precocious 11-year-olds.
I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but there's kind of like YA, which is considered more for like the high school crowd, and there's middle grade, which is more like middle school. And it felt kind of like a middle grade sort of book. Sorry, I'm getting climbed on by a dog. in terms of like being, you know, dealing with these complicated things, but telling them like in a straightforward and pretty simple way. Again, like if your main character is younger, that's usually a pretty good indicator that it's for a younger audience. So we thought, yeah, all of that straightforward and simpleness, not only like to show that Binti herself is like straightforward in the way she deals with things, but to kind of reflect who the story is trying to get across to.
Yeah, and I mean, to expand the story, you would have to change the style of it.
Yeah, you'd have to write it in a different way.
I would say even if it was as much as 20% longer, you would probably have to change the style of it.
Yeah.
Because it is just so direct. If you're going to add extra detail, you'd need more plot points. And if you start adding more plot points, then you start coming up with a novel-length plot instead of a novella-length plot.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it would be interesting to explore some of the other stuff in the universe. I don't know if you could kill off everybody on the ship in the raid and basically tell this same story if it was going to be told in a longer format. That would almost have to be like the opening event and have everything grow out from there.
Yeah. I did just learn, researching a little bit online, that it was announced that this is, I guess, going to be the first of 3 books.
Oh, really?
Or novellas. I don't know if the other 2 are going to be centered around Binti, or it's just going to be 2 other novellas told in the same universe, or what. I just saw, like, read that someone said there was an announcement that she was writing, like, 2 more.
Hmm.
In this general universe realm, maybe around Binti. So
my joke about the sequel being about the madcap adventures on campus of Binti and Okwu, where it wasn't even a joke, that's what's happening.
Maybe.
And then the story after that set another 10 years in the future where they're running a law firm together.
Oh my god.
That last one will be especially exciting.
Well then.
What, they'll be like public defenders or something, I don't know. What else, do we want to say anything else about the writing, aside from me being a dummy?
No, okay. I don't think so.
Okay. So, a couple of questions. These are both my questions for once. So one, what is treeing? Which is a thing she refers to a couple of times. I thought Gabs's explanation was quite satisfactory. So Gabs, tell the audience what you told me.
What I think treeing is?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically a way of entering kind of like a zen-like state, I think, where you use math instead of like meditation. So what it sounded like is that you like think of one mathematical equation and then you like branch off into another one and you just kind of follow this like rabbit hole down through all these complicated mathematical equations until you sort of hit this like moment of understanding in zen where where you, like, are able to have a specially clear thought. She does it when the Medusa attack and murder a bunch of people, and it kind of seems to help her go, okay, I need some food, and now I need to go lock myself in my room. So that was, like, kind of my understanding. It's, like, a way of math kind of getting you to this, like, brief place of enlightenment where you can think clearly and make some decisions under stressful circumstances if necessary.
Yeah, just another form of finding some quick inner calm, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, because we couldn't figure out if the starting point was actually on Earth, or if it was just an Earth-like planet that was maybe colonized by people from approximately Namibia. I was wondering if maybe it was a future universe where, cause I mean, certainly there is no shortage of science fiction stories where it seems really weird that the human race did this huge expansion off of planet Earth, like, yet every single person you encounter seems to have this really Anglo appearance and name. Or actually one that is maybe a little more common than that recently is where there are people from various cultures, but for some reason they all go form their own homogenous colonies. So it's not like, oh, everybody's interacted with everybody. It's like, well, the Americans went and founded a colony here and the Chinese did over here. So this is like the China planet, which is almost worse. And so I was wondering if this is a future where, for once, Africa got to lead the charge of colonizing the stars, and if that's because all the white people finally dummied up and killed themselves off in some nonsense war that they shouldn't have had.
Yeah, we were wondering, you know, we weren't 100% sure if she started on Earth. We're like, well, if not, then yeah, I wonder if this is just, like, African cultures on this planet, or, like, yeah, why they left Earth, we thought it seemed fairly reasonable that, you know, the fact that there are only 5% humans at Space Harvard, and they don't seem to have much pull in the universe, is maybe they managed to kill, most of us managed to kill ourselves off, and
yeah,
everyone else is like, I'm getting the hell out of here.
And that a couple of the staff, like the staff person on the ship and the professor at the university, were both described as Kush. So I was wondering if that Kush group was a dominant group, or that's also part of the reason I was wondering if it was a generic term for outsider relative to the Himba.
Yeah, we tried to Google both of them, and whereas, like, Himba pops up, Kush did not really seem to yield results, which makes us think it was, like, made up for the book, but
yeah, so
anyone could give insight to that.
Yeah, well, Earth was choking itself to death on carbon emissions, and we're too stubborn to, like, do anything about it. Did Africa secretly develop an interstellar colonization project, and like Namibia centered around, I don't know, Namibia maybe, because again, that's where the Himba seemed to be from, and it's going, oh, peace out, have fun choking to death. Enjoy your colonies, Europe. So I don't know, probably not, but you never know.
But it's possible.
That's right. So our verdict, as anyone who's listened to more than about 3 episodes of this podcast knows, I love world building. And I was pretty curious about some aspects of this universe, even though they were mostly background details to the real story. And so I enjoyed it for that. Even if I enjoyed it for nothing else, I would have enjoyed it for that. And I thought it was a pretty good story. It was quick, and it certainly told a story that we've all probably come across before in other places, but did a reasonably good job of it. Mostly, I'd say it leaves me curious to read some more of her work and see what kind of interesting universes and worlds she's built elsewhere.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Fast read. I did not love it just because, like, the narration style was, like, a little too simplistic and straightforward for my taste. I kind of wanted some more, like, when the characters were like, oh, I'm mad. Oh, why are you mad? This is why I'm mad. I wanted, like, a little bit, like, more out of that. But I have to say that I, like, did appreciate reading a book that brought in, like, different cultural aspects instead of just being, like, oh, here's a story about a white person going into space, which we have plenty of. So,
right.
Yeah, I really appreciated, like, bringing in, like, these new cultural aspects and some of that cool, like Ben was saying, cool world-building stuff going on in the background. And that was very refreshing, and I always appreciate seeing that. So yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Wouldn't say that I loved it. I would consider reading more of Nnedi Okorafor's, like maybe one of her full length novels, and seeing what she's about.
All right. So, what are you reading right now?
Well, I just finished A Wrinkle in Time, which you might remember Ben and I read back in 2012. It was like one of our early episodes. Just reread it, and I am now considering reading the other books Madeline L'Engle has written in that Time Court Quintet or whatever the heck it's called.
And you reread it for an upcoming episode of Nostalgia
Myalgia. Myalgia, yeah.
A little cross promotion.
Yeah, I'll try to plug it. Try to plug novel ideas when we talk about it. And I'm trying to read more nonfiction this year. I don't know if I mentioned that or not on a previous episode, but I got The Plantagenets by Dan Jones from the library, and it's basically just like talking about taking you through like all the Plantagenet rulers from I think it's William the Conqueror's grandson. It's like Henry II through, I don't remember who he's ending with. Before you get to even like Richard III and all of them, because then he wrote an additional book where he covered then the last little chunk of them. So 300 years of English kings and queens.
Kind of the Gav's historical sweet spot there.
Yeah, I enjoy it. And it's a kind of fun to read nonfiction written in like a super conversational way. Like he's just kind of like, oh yeah, these people were partying on a boat and they were drunk and stupid and the boat sank and they all drowned, so that sucked. And like, oh, okay. Moving on. So yeah, it's enjoyable.
Yeah, so I also kind of have a fiction-nonfiction combo going right now. I've been rereading, kind of devouring, the Jim Butcher's Codex Alera series, which I believe the premise of is roughly what would happen if you combined the lost Roman legion following through some portal in time and space into a magical place where people basically have, like, Pokemon. It's not quite that cut and dry, but I think that is roughly the premise. And then I am reading, as far as new stuff goes, reading a book called Scarcity. And I am going to really butcher one of these names, but by Sendil Mulanathan and Eldar Shafir. And it's a, I think it's kind of like an, I don't know if it's economic psychology, because I think that's its own specific field, but it definitely involves economics and psychology. And it's kind of about how people react to situations where whatever resource is scarce, and that can be in the sense of, hey, I have less money than this person, how does that affect my behavior? Or even in the sense of something like, if you're dieting, then there's kind of a, that creates in your mind like a calorie scarcity or something like that. So the way you think about food changes a lot, which makes sense. It's just kind of an economic angle on it instead of a psychological angle or both angles, or I don't actually know if it fits in one field better than the other, but it's pretty interesting.
All right.
Yeah, so if you have any comments, questions, corrections, certainly, when we're trying to talk about cultural subjects outside our normal sphere, you can leave a comment at novelideaspodcast.com.
You can tweet us. You can tweet Novel Ideas, which is basically Ben, at Novel Ideas Pod. Or if you want to tweet me directly, you can find me at Classic Sum Up.
We are on iTunes.
Yes.
You can leave comments there. I guess ratings and reviews are good for us. I don't know how...
We have 14 ratings.
Yeah, well, that's like 10 more than I thought, actually.
I checked it the other day.
I'm not sure how often we look at those, but I gather the way their metrics work, the more ratings you have, the higher on their list of podcasts it shows up.
Yes, like if we were to get suddenly 100 more ratings and reviews, we might pop up on like a trending now sort of what's hot list, and then that could be super cool. So if anyone listens to us and hasn't rated and reviewed us on iTunes, just convince like everyone you know to go do it, and we'll try to get up to 100 and see if anything fun happens.
That's right.
See if we can finally get our Audible sponsorship.
That's right. even if we never rise up any of those trending lists or anything, or ever have a greatly expanded listenership from what we have already had, I will still always be somewhat smug that we managed to do over 100 episodes of this. And we are, as previously mentioned, we are also part of the Minerva Podcast Network. You can find us at minervamag.com. There's a decent chance, if you're listening to this, you did.
Yes.
And we'll see comments you leave there if you don't feel like leaving there and finding one of the other places.
Oh, the other thing I should mention is Novel Ideas officially has a Facebook page.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that.
So you can find us at facebook.com/novelideaspodcast. Like us. I haven't done anything too exciting with it yet, except posting just like links to old episodes and new episodes. But I'm going to start trying to get on there regularly and do like little reviews of books I'm reading and stuff to give people like extra content. So yeah, I would check it out just because, you know, it's about time. It's been a while.
It only took us like 4 years to have a Facebook page.
Yeah, because apparently whenever Dad tells people about Novel Ideas, like old people, they're like, oh, do they have a Facebook page? And he's like, no, they're on Twitter. And they're like, I don't know what Twitter is. So I was like, all right, get a Facebook page.
It's funny in so many ways, but I'm actually not a Facebook user. For those of you who didn't know that.
Yeah, the Facebook is run entirely by me, guys. So.
I'm also not an iTunes user, come to that. But anyway, my lack of technological interest is secondary to the fact that I'm somehow doing an internet-specific medium. So I think that's going to do it this time. I think we have ideas. We've discussed internally ideas for next time, but we're not sure what it is yet.
Yeah.
So I think that's gonna do it. That'll wrap us up. So
yep.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye! 'Cause everything's still forgiven.